We all hate the steam clock. It's the dumbest thing around. It runs on electricity. Steam only makes the sound. Let me tell you of a true guest town luminary. It's John Dayton, old gassy Jack, and this is his story. Oh, we love you, gassy Jack, Jack of Vancouver, bartender, civic hero. Where would our city be but for your whiskey? No fun and no watering holes. In Hull, not Gatineau. But the one in old England there was a young man who learned to sail. Signed on with an American merchant ship, and his adventures took him cross the sea and continent. The smell of gold took him to California, where red-hot embers of the Fraser drew him to its mouth. But he wasn't a good gold miner. Nothing really panned out. Still, we love you, gassy Jack, Jack of Vancouver, bartender, civic hero. Where would our city be but for your whiskey? No fun and no watering holes. We haven't had a song in a while, so this is the Canby Report!
Today is August 23rd, 2019, and welcome back.
I'm Matthew Naylor.
I'm Ian Bushfield.
And we are very pleased to be back for another edition of the Canby Report during this long, hot, muggy summer.
It's not been too hot the last week.
No. Yes, it has. Maybe it's just because I have to, like, do a lot of driving and I have to wear a suit all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I've just been like, ugh, ugh, fuck the weather, fuck the sun, my old enemy. I truly grew to hate the sun when I was in Australia, and it's a hate that comes roaring back when I am sweating in a business suit.
At least we're not like Sao Paulo and smoked in.
That's true. And admittedly, riding around last year where, like, I was breathing the incinerated interior was, like, subpar as an experience goes anyway. But I'm glad we aren't burning so much this year so far.
But we have a burner of a show for you today.
Truly, truly so much. And I should explain why I began with the song. So it actually stems from my hatred of the steam clock, which is passionate and all-consuming.
I think we've talked about the steam clock in Gastown on a previous Vancouverada, but it's the 1980s tourist trap installed
in part to help drive the homeless out of Gastown, because the steam clock, as one might expect, is on top of a steam vent, which used to provide warmth for people who were sleeping outside. Instead, they decided to put a giant ornate clock over it that would draw tourists and drive out the homeless. Mwah, mwah, as the low, mournful wail of the steam clock whistles chime 7 minutes late.
And that just about leads us into our first story. But before we get into that, a couple announcements as always. We need your support at patreon.com/CanbyReport.
Patreon.com/CanbyReport. Patreon.com/CanbyReport.
That support helps keep the show going. It'll help us in the next month bring on some support to help do a lot of the back end work and get the episodes turned around as quickly as you've come to expect, because I'm going to be going on some leave.
Yeah, hell, because if you want me to edit them, our editing schedule might break down entirely. I'm sorry. But please do check out the recent episode of Spirits of the Law, which I recorded during Pride and managed to get out only a week and a half after. So we tried a bunch of different ciders. We talked about the history of gay pride in Canada and corruption and Dominic LeBlanc. It's fascinating stuff, so go listen to that. Anything happening on Politicoast?
We just had the two co-hosts of the Call the Question podcast on for this week's episode 152. We also had a big show a couple weeks ago for our 150th that we held down at Creative Coworkers with Nicholas Berling and Zoe Ferry, past Canby Report guests, joining us there. So lots of good content up there, and there'll be lots more coming up as the federal election takes off.
Yes, but you mentioned, you know, somewhat obliquely, Where are you going September?
Parental leave. My wife is 37 weeks pregnant, and so I'm hoping to have at least one more week to do work, which involves like telling people who are going to be keeping the ship afloat while I'm off how to do that. So yeah. Hopefully the baby doesn't come soon and I get a little bit more time, but this might be my last episode on Cambie Report, depending how things all work out.
Well,
for a little while.
You know, congratulations, and I'm looking forward to meeting the newest member of the Cambie Report family. But it does behoove us to begin the show, I suppose. So, what's happening in Oppenheimer Park?
So we talked about this on the last time we sat down, where the city was in this tight situation of trying to figure out what to do about the homeless camp that was there, that has been there. And this week was the week of action. At the start of the week, the city issued notice, I think it's through the park board, for everyone there to vacate. There was about 140 people by the park board's estimate. And the city said they had homes for at least 100 people. So that should all work out. Astute mathematical listeners might notice those numbers are different. And The city has been able to rehouse about 2/3 of the park residents. Their eviction deadline was Wednesday.
93 people apparently have moved into housing or shelter accommodations.
And so there's still a bit of an outstanding question. One of the other big issues here is the mayor's been missing in action on this.
Yeah, and Jen St. Denis had a piece on this where, like, it's hard to describe an absence. Like, what is happening? There really should be someone more than Gene Swanson, who admittedly is an absolute, like, blinding light of hope on this issue, I will say.
This is her issue.
Yeah. You know, despite being an obstructive presence on council in many other ways, this is something that is of immense positive to her presence on council. And she is the only one talking about it, really, which is very disappointing when you look at Kennedy Stewart and you look to the mayor for leadership. Vancouver, unfortunately, has this very weak mayor system where, you know, you don't actually have a lot of actual power in terms of the legislative or administrative power compared to other councillors. But, you know, I think that when Vancouverites look back at our history, we remember the mayor. We remember, you know, Philip Oham or Gregor Robertson or Larry Campbell, and fuck if I could tell you who was on any of those councils at the drop of a hat. Gordon Campbell, Mike Harcourt, these people used the mayor's seat as a vaulting place, but they used it to vault. And in that vaulting, they were actually quite active in terms of civic politics. They built a name for themselves, and they are doing much more than our current mayor is doing. Why?
Well, on the other side of this issue, you have voices like George Affleck and Michael Geller, who took to...
Oh, my God.
So we'll get to Geller in a second, but George Affleck takes to a column to call out a lack of leadership on this file and says even Vision, for all of Gregor Robertson's faults, would have at least been doing something. And George took this very, like, we needed to send the forces in and clear this out months ago because no one can use this park, and that kind of approach, which Geller took to the next level by arguing that
no one can use this park except for the 140 people that are using
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is like more people than I see in most parks most of the time, I will point out.
Well, and Geller pretty much said, if people won't take accommodations that are available to them, maybe we could just put them in jail or something. Almost
no,
to that
actually,
fact.
We can't.
He did retract that. After okay. hearing from people who said, I'll show you the accommodations they're offering, and here's why I'm in a tent instead. And he went, oh, there's some nuance to this conversation. So credit to him for backtracking, even though he started at a pretty reprehensible place.
Yeah, also, you can't put people in jail, like, arbitrarily. I mean, you can.
It doesn't work
many
out.
Many of my plans have been derailed by a phone call saying, I'm in jail! And I'm like, oh, no, no. We're preparing for a bail hearing tomorrow, aren't we? All right.
And so this is a tough issue, and the park board is somewhat split over this. You have the NPA commissioners, like John Cooper, you know, cheering the efforts to clear this, and you have the COPE commissioners raising their objections and their concerns to the process and the speed of it. And everyone wants to see everyone housed safely and comfortably. And how do we get from here to there is kind of the question. And tensions just arise in these situations.
Yeah, and like unless we get things like Christine Boyle's motion to make every neighborhood for everyone actually through council, then we're going to have this problem crop up again somewhere else. And, you know, when I say problem, I mean, like, a community exists that needs a place to stay. They must find a place to stay that is safe for them. And if they feel safe in the park, I personally don't have a problem with people staying there on an interim basis until society can, like, fulfill its obligations to these people and get them a home. But anyway.
That's not the only protest that's going on in Vancouver very recently. Dueling protests,
like a true Alexander Hamilton spectacular. Number one, yeah, Hong Kong is a bit of a gong show of late.
And that's an international story that I haven't followed closely enough, but the local angle is outside the Cambie Broadway SkyTrain station recently, protesters challenging
The bill that basically there is a bill that would strip democracy from Hong Kong. There is more nuance to it than that, but this is a civic politics podcast, and so go check out, I don't know, Pod Save the World.
And so you have protesters standing up for the citizens of Hong Kong here in Vancouver, many of them expats. And then on the other side of the street, you ended up getting a number of pro-Chinese government protesters, counter-protesters, who I did see some reports had very new and nice, looked like brand new flags. And I'm not saying it was an AstroTurf protest, but
they are here of their own volition, though. They were all very, apparently, very clear in pointing that out when asked by reporters who were on scene.
Yeah, the reports from interviewing those protesters were weird because everyone had the same rehearsed line. Maybe not rehearsed, but they sounded rehearsed. And
I don't think they were rehearsed. They could have, you know, ad-libbed a little bit, but someone gave them talking points. Let's just go there. And as to whether that was the Chinese consulate or not is something that is beyond the capacity of this podcast to ascertain concretely one way or the other. But I'm certainly not above letting people draw their own conclusions. I know that I have drawn mine.
Well, and one of the other stories that came out of this was some of the pro-China protesters who are apparently getting aggressive outside a local church where inside the congregants were more pro-Hong Kong, and that became another issue of people's freedom and right to feel secure in their place of worship, and it's a messy story.
Yeah, and, like, it's weird when international politics, like, it descends on a train station that I take a bunch. Like, that's super weird, and I don't like it very much. Like, I certainly support both sides' right to protest because we are a free society, unlike some others. And, you know, I think that China can very well go suck an egg when they tell Canada to, like, tamp down on our protests, you know, to make them feel better. No, thank you. So, from China at Cambie and Broadway, we move, again, along the SkyTrain line, changing trains downtown out to Burnaby for another protest.
Not quite Burnaby, but the Hastings racetrack.
Oh, okay. We're going to make a stop. We're going to make a stop at Rupert
Station. On the 95 B line.
Okay.
There's a story this week that the Canadian Border Services Agency raided the Hastings racetrack, which was a little bit surprising to me because when you hear about border agents going through and finding illegal migrants and deporting them, you usually think of America, but this was much closer to home, as someone had tipped the CBSA off that the Hastings racetrack might be employing immigrants not under perfect working permitting situations.
Yeah, so they're like temporary foreign workers visa or...
And I think there was like an additional license you have to work at a gambling establishment that they didn't necessarily get properly.
Oh, all right.
But something weird comes up in here where it sounds like someone may have tipped off the CBSA using a back channel that may or may not have been appropriate. And now you have a number.
So we have like a fruit of the poison tree thing.
Possibly. It's a bit murky, but now you have a number of people who are facing deportation.
This is one of those issues where I find myself quite torn because, one, I am like a bit of a Max Canner, like Maximum Canada type person where I like generally think that the more people, the better. But I do still believe in the rule of law, you know, as a legal operator in training might, not a lawyer, hashtag not a lawyer. And it's just like very strange. And I just sort of like fall back into this weird historical hole about the Hastings racetrack, because like rounding up people at the Hastings racetrack has this super dark history as Vancouver's past goes, because that's where we took everyone for Japanese internment when we decided to steal an entire ethnic community's property and then ship them off to the interior for basically no reason. Actually, no, there was a reason. It was because we wanted their stuff. And this, it's impossible to not think about that when a roundup of people happens at the Hastings racetrack.
And the Hastings racetrack is also under BC Gaming's eye for all of the money laundering inquiry type activities that are going on. Horse racing was identified as a possible route, not a major route, because there's not actually that much money in horse racing these days. But it's been in the, you know, it's been getting some extra scrutiny. And I guess what the racetrack owners are alleging is that the workers he had working for him were given fraudulent licenses by BC Gaming, and then BC Gaming tipped off CBSA that this happened because of a rogue agent in BC Gaming. And he's like, well, this isn't my fault that I had a temper, you know, illegal foreign workers. Please don't throw them out of the country.
Yeah. And like, it's
a mess.
It's a mess. And obviously we will follow up on this as things progress, because like it is insane. And immigration law is fascinating. And especially when it has a local, is even dark flavor to it. So from the 95B, wait, what is it? R3? R4?
Three. Rapidus?
Yeah.
I don't know which one it is.
Arbus 3? What? It's going to get shortened. Like, Rapid Bus is not going to be what's going to be used.
No.
It's going to be like the Arbus or the R3.
The Arby's.
Yeah, the R. I was looking at Arbus, and apparently there is this photographer named Diane Arbus who like photographed people in marginalized communities in the United States. And I can just imagine like a bus wrap with a bunch of like Diane Arbus photos on it showcasing, you know, marginalized communities and talking about how that's important. Anyway, that's an art project that Translake should take under advisement. So,
well, another thing they could put forward is the Olympic Line streetcar once again, which would take you over to Granville Island, where there's a new ruler in town.
Yes.
A new committee.
Meet the new boss.
Slightly more power than the old boss.
Yes. So what's happening on Granville Island, and why did we need to change?
So a report came out recently, and there's been some good work on the state of Granville Island. I think it was in the Tyee, just highlighting that governance there has become kind of a mess. A lot of art studios are struggling. Emily Carr has pulled, I think, a bit out of the island.
Yeah.
Not entirely.
It's moved actually just down the street from our recording studio,
right,
to Great Northern Way campus.
Right. And so there's been these questions about what's going on there, how do we fix it? And this report about, you know, Granville Island 2040 came out suggesting a number of changes, including appointing a new committee, giving them more powers. The change in parking fares was part of the initial steps toward this. And so this new committee has been appointed with the power to start fixing up the island and making it the place you want to go in the future. And this includes better connections like the elevator to the Granville Bridge and a new boardwalk on
the
east end.
Is so much fun to walk on.
Well, once they put
the greenway in,
the greenway down the middle.
So I'm actually like interested in this, and like it's weird to talk about Granville Island on a civic issues podcast sometimes, because like while it is local, it is not a municipal responsibility. It is a federal land, and is under the jurisdiction of the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, which will surprisingly be making another appearance later in the show. So this new committee is going to be meeting first on September 24th, electing a chair and, you know, getting on with governing Granville Island and regenerating it. I think it's the right time to be doing this. Like, it's not a catastrophe zone. Like, they didn't let Granville Island degenerate into, you know, I don't know, just an ooze of concrete from the broken down plant or whatever. But, you know, it would be nice if that concrete ball rolling Rube Goldberg machine wasn't broken 75% of the time. And, you know, the very exciting and vibrant character of the island wasn't completely obliterated by neglect.
Yeah, the new committee will have more ability to listen to local residents. The people on it are Andine Yvonne Pitt, who's a VP with Wasserman and Partners and has worked on things like Ontario Place and Canadian Museum of History.
Dale McClanahan, Housing Development and Consulting Venture Capital CEO.
Dominic Caminiti, who's with CMHC.
Grassen Chungath.
Apologies.
Yep, many apologies, because that's not what the name is pronounced as. But he's, or she, or they, are the Director of Strategic Operations Planning and Program Management of the Arts, Culture, and Community Services for the City of Vancouver. And here's a name that you might recognize. It is Heather Deal.
Former Vancouver City Councillor. Then there's Johanna Leianto, who's a manager with Strathcona Business Improvement Association.
And Paul LaRocque, President and CEO of Arts Umbrella.
So a nice mix of developers, arts community, people engaged with the city. It's kind of,
you know,
a bit of
politicians emeritus. This is an excellent place for Heather Deal to end up too, by the way. Like, while I was not sad to see Vision go, I was sad to see Heather Deal go. And so hopefully she will engage in some very positive double dealing.
Well, from Granville Island up the hill a bit, construction work has started on the Broadway subway extension.
Yep. So this prep work is just the beginning. There is going to be more disruptive stuff to come, obviously. But it's happening, folks. It's happening.
This will only take it to Arbutus. That's all it will be.
So far, unless, of course, like, it takes a while to drill a hole. And if we can, you know, if the mayor, maybe the mayor, maybe this is what's happening. Maybe the mayor is so busy lobbying Ottawa and Victoria for federal funding that he doesn't have any time to speak on the Oppenheimer Park issue. Maybe that's what's happening. He did enter the, like, grand alliance with the Soviet Union, or vice versa, I suppose, with Doug McCallum in trying to get the SkyTrain extended, and, like, both of those seem to have fizzled somewhat. However, I am still hopeful that something might extend beyond that barkless tree.
That's what all Vancouverites are hoping for. With the extension.
Except for Councillor Hardwick.
Yeah.
Old stock Vancouver doesn't want it, obviously.
Well, with the extension of the Broadway subway comes a number of zoning changes that have already been talked about and potential for up zoning development. Some of that's also happening along the Cambie Corridor, where the city approved the Cambie Corridor plan last year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the buildings in that plan
is getting planned out of existence. So Beercraft, that fixture of, you know, late undergrad for me, I guess, and place with surprisingly slim beer selection.
I think it's a little bit bigger now.
Yeah, but, like, I'm reminded of how, like, Lafayette was a radical at the beginning of the French Revolution, and then the French Revolution kind of passed him by, and he was, like, a reactionary by the end of it. Beercraft, in terms of the selection of beers, was very radical a number of years ago, and then the craft beer revolution gushed, washed over it in a giant tidal wave of hoppy, sudsy liquid, and now apparently is getting washed away by the sheer force of development. So maybe condos? Condos? Is there condos involved?
So the building has been sold for $12.5 million. The deal was finalized on July 31st. It might not get changed. It might just be in new owners' hands, but the spot is zoned for up to a 6-story building with ground level retail and 4 levels of residential above. So it's likely going to be condos and maybe Starbucks on the ground floor.
Well, I mean, I basically am 75% Arabica at this point. So, I mean, I can't even complain about another Starbucks on my stagger home.
But while we're talking about zoning and land use changes, you wanted to talk about Adrian Crook's latest essay.
Yes. So Adrian Crook, friend of the show, I suppose, is writing a piece in the Daily Hive called How Changing Zoning Could Unlock Affordable Homes in Metro Vancouver. Basically, he talks about how the changes that the provincial government has brought in with respect to rental-only zoning have been used negatively so far, and how they have the potential to be positive and actually be used the way that they were intended to be used by Minister Robinson when they were introduced. Basically, they allowed for densification of areas if there was a rental-only limitation. However, what some places have done, New Westminster, Richmond, here's looking at you, you unruly children of the environs, have rezoned certain areas to be rental-only when they were stratified beforehand, which decreases the property values and has resulted in several lawsuits and actually a loss of density in those areas. Which sucks, because I like money and people and want more of both.
It's an interesting piece and worth reading. I think we are still seeing a lot of municipalities figure out what to do with this. Burnaby is looking at a number of options as well, and I think is still on the edge of starting to roll out some of this land use. What was striking, for example, when I was talking to Brad West and what we've seen with other councils, is Vancouver's behind on this.
Yeah.
Even if you think New West has done it wrong, like Adrian has, they've at least tried something. And Vancouver's kind of still playing around with, what about this rezoning over here? And what about that single rezoning over there? And it's like, get on with it. Stop arguing over single projects and do some, and I know we're in the midst of a citywide plan process, which is going to take its sweet time.
Yeah, it does. It does kind of like make me rethink my support for a citywide plan, as to like whether or not the actual planning process will be so long and just like straining the time that this council has left in order to get something done. I am unconvinced that it is a good idea anymore, but we're doing it, so let's hopefully get on with it and then start rezoning, because god damn it, we needed these homes like 3 years ago.
Well, and the trouble with Vancouver Council is how fractured it is, right? There is, if we tried to take this broader approach, I don't know that we have another way forward except the citywide plan. If any faction had a majority on council, perhaps, but they're struggling right now to get any rezoning done.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's this very precise balance between, like, mildly conservationist and mildly pro-development YIMBYer types. And, like, aside from those few bright lights in there, DeGenova, Kennedy Stewart, Dominato in particular.
Boyle,
of course. I mean, she shines. She's right on top of my civic Christmas tree at the moment. The whole, like, actual makeup of council does present this huge challenge. And unless they can start talking in, again, back rooms a little more, I think we're going to have these problems going on into the future. And that might, for all the optimism that accompanied this new council's ascension, might actually end up just miring itself in the muck.
We'll have to see where it goes when council returns in September. But from the challenges in Vancouver to the challenges isn't the right word for what's going on in Surrey. But luckily, I think for the residents of Surrey, they don't need to worry about their mayor stumbling through the Brexit of the RCMP, the Rexit, as it were.
Yeah.
RCMPexit.
No.
No.
Actually, I kind of like it. Rarsum Sexit.
The province has announced that Surrey can go ahead with this new police force breaking off from the RCMP.
They can definitely go ahead with it. Or rather, it will go ahead, but they can't go ahead with it.
And the province has taken it over because they went and looked at the process and went,
nope.
We can do this.
Yeah, they...
We don't want you to do this.
Yeah, they noped the hell right out of Surrey's hands. Frankly, I think that's the best of both worlds, because the RCMP have a checkered history in terms of policing, and I personally don't think that they are actually really the right vehicle to provide police services to large cities. And so it makes a lot of sense for me to see the implementation of a Surrey City police force. That being said, Doug McCallum probably wasn't the right guy to lead that transition, you know, however instrumental he was in getting it started.
The right person, according to the province, though, is Wally Opal.
Yes, because there is only one person in British Columbia
who can do any commission type thing.
I mean, like, it's not unreasonable. Wally Opal, of course, being the former attorney general, like, former judge, former leader of the Opal Commission, current leader of another Opal Commission.
Briefly involved in the speaker's office fiasco.
Oh, my God.
Very briefly. and also chancellor of Thompson Rivers University.
Oh, who knew?
Wikipedia.
Well, he also, it's funny because I hadn't seen him in like 8 years or something. I worked on his 2009 campaign in Delta South, where we lost by 32 votes. That was a tough day. And then he showed up all of a sudden at my law school in Australia because he has this relationship with Bond University, apparently, and was just there. And like any good politician, remembered who I was. So that was nice.
So Doug McCallum had set out that by 2021, this new police force will be in place, April ideally. Mike Farnworth has made no commitment to that timeline, but Wally Opal has taken to saying it'll be a priority for his committee to try to meet that.
Well,
which is optimistic, I'll say.
Yeah, especially since Wally was never the speediest of people in terms of action.
So we'll see.
I tell you, campaigning with that guy, the point of door knocking is to like meet as many people in as quick amount of time as possible and not like engage in the very in-depth policy-oriented discussion that Wally Opal loves, but try and break Wally Opal from that particular habit.
Well, this role seems perfect for detail-oriented type people. And like you, I agree, long-term, a municipal police force will be better than the RCMP for Surrey, and this seems like a better way to get us there. So good for the province, good for Mike Farnworth and his assistant, who we shall not name. But while we're talking about the burbs, let's talk briefly about Burnaby, my burb.
Mm-hmm. So, just as in Vancouver, you lack the pleasure of a ward.
Just like most municipalities in British Columbia.
Yes.
But if Antonio Samoas gets his way, the, quote, not sexy issue of electoral reform will be taken on by the council.
Oh, stop being so goddamn defeatist. Like, no issue is sexy except for Bedford. That being said, like, it's important. And I think people recognize that how they operate in a democracy is important. Have some faith in your fellow Burnabarians, Burnabites, whatever.
I like Burnabarians, but apparently the city doesn't want to officially adopt that.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it would just be giving Daggerette free advertising that they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not the best brewery in Burnaby, according to the Burnaby Now.
No,
Steamworks is.
Steamworks is. But, of course, the best sandwich shop in Burnaby is
Subway.
Subway.
Never trust your newspaper polls.
Nope.
So,
best coffee shop?
Starbucks. So Samoa's goal is for a mixed system. Doing a proportional representation system would require a lot of changes, I think, to the community charter at the provincial level. But I believe, just like Vancouver, municipalities can do wards at large or a mix of both. And right now, Lake Country in the interior does actually have that. They have four wards which represent the original towns
that came together.
Yeah,
the amalgam of communities that became probably the corporation of the District of Lake Country.
And then there's two at-large and a at-large mayor. So, or you get your own local representative, plus you have two or three people who are at-large.
Which, like, I think might be a pleasant way to slice the baby in half.
And that was, I think, exactly Shauna Sylvester's proposal when she was running for mayor, the 5x5 system.
Yes, 5 and 5, but anyway.
You have 25 representatives, actually.
Yeah, and they are.
Although Vancouver should get more.
Cross-pollinated against one another. So.
Vancouver should have more councillors.
But that's
a separate debate.
Yeah.
So we'll post a link to this guy's petition and
encourage you to sign it, to be honest. I encourage you to sign it.
Yeah. Burnaby Council has said they're not going to look at this unless he can show that there's some groundswell of support. So let's find our Burnaby listeners and sign this thing.
Finally, back to Vancouver for some Vancouverata. Well, I am very excited about this one, Ian, because I found something while browsing the Vancouver Heritage Society's website. And while the Vancouver Heritage Society is what could gently be described as arch NIMBY,
they do have, I imagine, a wealth of information on the random Vancouver facts.
Yes, including a particular type of house covering that I've always kind of thought, oh, that's weird whenever I saw it, but never really thought about it that much. You know, many things are different from the place that I grew up, and I thought that this might just be one of those things that Calgary didn't do that other places did. And while that is accurate, the only other place that does this is Vancouver. Bottle-stucco. So, what is stucco? It is a render placed on the outside of a building that insulates and seals. It is able to keep water from rotting the timber inside and often will require some kind of agent stuck to the outside in order to protect the stucco from both generally looking shitty after like a very short amount of time and just to spice it up a little bit. So, what does Vancouver do that is different from everywhere else? Well, most places, in terms of that like coating on the outside, use rock. So that's called rock-stucco. Bottle-stucco is made of broken glass.
It's recycled buildings.
Yeah, it is recycled buildings, recycled bottles, and the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, here it is again! Woo! From managing Granville Island to influencing the built form of Vancouver.
In the biz, they call that a callback.
Yeah. And we are in the biz. Go to patreon.com/CanbyReport and subscribe. For some reason, like this policy impacted Vancouver in a specific way, which was to like stucco up a bunch of old timber frame houses. And those involved in Vancouver alone, for some reason, taking a bunch of broken glass and sticking it to the sides of the house. And usually that was brown glass or green glass, the two most common forms. But for some reason, there was a bunch of blue glass in some of them and some very unusual red glass, which mostly has been picked out by inquisitive children over the years.
As we take our buildings apart by
tiny, tiny hands, one tiny piece at a time. So bottle-stucco.
And it's very Vancouver in a way to try to upcycle your house. You know, find something that it's that minimum, you know, surface level recycling and eco initiative that probably doesn't actually make a huge impact on the environment, but it's unique.
Yeah, I don't think that there's very much like environmental value to it. Oh, it was blue milk of magnesia bottles. That's what it was. But it does glitter on a sunny day whenever we get sun from time to time. And I just think it's nice. Maybe we should have some more glass-coated buildings. It's very Byzantine. Well, go out, take a walk around Vancouver on the next sunny day, and enjoy the glittering majesty of Vancouver's bottle-stucco, the building form that gave Vancouver the nickname Sparkle Town in some very specific quarters. That's been our show today. I really hope you enjoyed it. I had a ton of fun making it today.
It was good to be back.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll get one more show in with Ian before the newest Bushfield arrives.
If not, I got tons of more interviews that you can do with people at City Vancouver and elsewhere. And we'll find some special guests to fill in.
Yeah, I look forward to our revolving cadre of co-hosts that I will be able to talk civic politics with. It's going to be an interesting fall in Vancouver. Stay tuned. This council is only a year old, and it is crazy already. So, for the August 23rd edition of the Canby Report, I'm Matthew Naylor.
I'm Ian Bushfield.
Good night.